Honestly, people are just playing too small. If you're not email marketing, you're missing the boat. Like email market, I send 150 million emails a month out. Wow. And we're trying to figure out how to send 500 million.
Wow.
Because it still works.
We stand today.
This is Method.
The
Business Method. The Business Method Podcast.
The Business Method Podcast featuring Chris Reynolds. Entrepreneurs, systems, methods, tools, and tactics for location independence.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people of all ages, welcome to the Business Method Podcast, where we examine the different methods, tools, and tactics of high-performance online entrepreneurs and high-caliber people in a series format. Our first series, we interviewed 100 entrepreneurs in 100 days that had built businesses creating $100,000 or more annually. On our second series, we are interviewing 100 entrepreneurs that have built location-independent businesses that generate $1 million or more in annual revenue. There is a growing movement of people building these caliber of businesses, and we wanted to get behind the minds, the logic, and the science of what it takes to build a business like this. We've had some incredible guests like Bobby Edwards, the founder of Squatty Potty, who built a $35 million per year company with just 17 employees, and JP Sears, the YouTube superstar whose videos are going viral all over the internet. I'm your host, Chris Reynolds, and we hope you enjoy the show.
The Business Method.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to the show. Today, we have an incredible guest that's an entrepreneur that is using real estate to maximize his location independence. A lot of listeners out there have gotten to the point in their business where they have some extra money and they want to learn about investments and real estate. Our guest today, Mark Evans, started out with real estate and business and used it from day one to create an incredible amount of location independence in his life. Mark is an entrepreneur and author who has written 9 books. On the show today, Mark defines his version of location independence, how he manages his team while traveling long-term, what holds many entrepreneurs back from reaching the next level, and the deal-making mentality. Mark also dives into his email marketing system. Currently, he is sending out 150 million emails per month. It's an incredible episode, guys, and without further ado, let's welcome Mark to the show.
Entrepreneurs, systems, methods, tools, and tactics.
Mark Evans, the Dealmaker. Welcome to the show, man. How are you?
Awesome, Chris. Thanks for having me, buddy. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Where in the world are you reporting from today?
Today, I'm just getting back to Florida. Parkland, Florida.
That's your home base, right?
It's my home residence, and then I also live in Ohio part-time as well. So I live up in Ohio about 4 or 5 months a year.
Are you from Ohio, or you just do a lot of business there?
Yeah, Columbus, Ohio, boy. Been from there my whole life, but been doing business there since 96.
And then you do, so you're Florida in the winter season and then Ohio in the summer season?
Absolutely.
In what part of Florida?
Parkland, Florida. Right outside of Fort Lauderdale area.
Gotcha. Very cool. Well, welcome to the show, man. I'm excited to have you on for a couple of reasons. Like I've talked to a lot of real estate people before and entrepreneurs back in the U.S. who are creating awesome businesses. But I think like from what I gather from you, you're really living like a location independent lifestyle. And you're using that to your advantage for pleasure and both for business, it seems like. Is that right?
That's correct.
What's your year like? Like travel versus staying in the U.S. and doing business in the U.S. and even travel to do business?
Yeah, well, here's a big difference on my side, Chris. I've been remote since December 31st, 2005. So the best way people can get remote is they actually have to have a real business. I know a lot of people say, oh, I'm a remote lifestyle, which is a lifestyle, not a business. I've actually built a real massive real estate company virtually. So I was local from 96 to 05. And then my wife and I, we actually traveled around the world while the business was growing for 7 years. So back then, I literally was homeless. I had no home in the States. We were just traveling and going wherever the wind took us, honestly.
That's great.
We'd wake up Friday and we'd be in Spain and say, hey, let's go to somewhere, just like literally somewhere else in 24 hours for another month or two. And we always stayed for a month or two at a time, typically, or sometimes even longer. And just to kind of really get incorporated with the culture and the experiences and, you know, force you to become virtual.
Right.
Hyperventilating too much.
So what is that? Can you, for the listeners, can you explain a little bit what a virtual real estate company is?
Well, it's first of all, virtual is to me is just a business owner. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if we're talking to people looking for destination free environments, like what I see it as is just having a real company, and I could be anywhere in the world while the company's running. So buyers are being, you know, talked to, seller, we're buying properties every day, teams building management companies and, you know, opting in people in, doing webinars, podcast shows, whatever they need to do to build the brand, the business. So it's more me focusing and working on the business, not necessarily working in the business, if that makes sense.
Perfect. And are you, where are you doing the majority of your real estate these days?
Almost 100% of our business happens in Ohio. So my entire real estate company, you know, my buy, sell team and everything's in Palm Beach, Florida. So everything's done from afar as well, even when we're big in Ohio. We have grounds guys in Ohio, of course, because real estate requires that. But at the end of the day, the main office is in Palm Beach, Florida.
And what type of real estate strategies are you using?
Well, I've been doing it 22 years, so we use all strategies, right? Yeah. At the end of the day, we're buying and selling. Either wholesaling or thing. Not when I say wholesaling, we actually buy everything. We don't take a piece of paper and sell it like a lot of people do. It's not a bad strategy if you're starting out. But we do that. We're one of the largest turnkey companies in America, American Wealth Builders, which is awesome. And that company is growing every day. Rehabs, you know, we do have a retail division where we're rehabbing a couple properties at all times in the 200,000-300,000 range, which in Ohio is a big deal. Nice houses. Mm-hmm. And everything in between. I mean, we've been doing it so long, we're kind of incorporated in all of them.
How'd you get into real estate?
Yeah, man, I grew up small town Ohio, out east of Columbus, you know, grew up poor. No, you know, when I say poor, I should say broke, because not poor is a mindset, but I grew up broke and knew I wanted to be rich, didn't know what rich meant back then. To me, that would have been $100,000 a year. And I remember laying in bed and saying, I got to figure out what I want to do. I'm not going to go to college ever. Had zero desire. barely graduated high school with a 1.8. And I just never liked working for people or being told by someone what to do that they had no clue what they were doing. So I just kind of started off on the journey immediately. I've never had a real job ever in my adult life because I said, if I don't kill it, I don't eat. Real simple. So that's it, man. I went to a seminar, saw a guy make a phone call and said, I can do that.
How old were you?
I was literally 2 days after 18 years old.
Wow.
So, June 21st actually will be my 22-year anniversary in the game.
Congratulations. But,
yeah, thank you. So I'm excited for it. And, you know, the thing is those are newspaper days, right? When you had to actually go to a real library, get a newspaper in the mail or on your doorstep. And now anybody can do this business so much easier, just, you know, 100% remotely.
What would you tell yourself that 18-year-old self, if you could give him some advice?
Think bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like I said, my goal was to make $100,000 a year. I did not know anybody in my world that made $100,000 a year ever until I was like 20 something years old. So to me, like that was like more of like, how the hell do you make $100,000 a year? And then the way I did it, honestly, is I started reverse engineering hourly, right? Hey, if I work 40 hours a week, you know, kind of like that's the mindset I was around my whole entire life. You know, you work, you get paid per hour. And as you know, as an entrepreneur, that's not how it is. Definitely is not the case.
What was the family life like growing up?
Dude, great. Like my parents are amazing. They just, where I come from, everyone wakes up, goes to work, works hard, comes home, has a couple beers, has dinner, go to bed, repeat process. Mm-hmm. Complain about the job, complain about the employees they work with. And I just said, you know, we only got one shot at this thing called life. Why the heck are we doing this? That's what I thought to myself. But my parent, you know, again, Christmas, we'd get one gift, pair of underwear and socks, and a gift. But I never really realized we were poor. I was just thankful we actually had, you know, my parents showed up at every sporting event I did. I still don't know how my parents did it, but they're amazing people, and you know they've given me a lot of great skill sets to carry on to my wife and my son and everything moving forward is for sure.
Do you have siblings?
Two sisters. Yep.
What do you think? Did they follow a similar path in life as you?
Zero. No, they're by 180 degrees from me.
So what do you think made you have that spark or that ambition or that drive to live this different lifestyle? Because I think like the way you speak about your childhood is very similar to mine. I grew up in Missouri, blue collared father, mom was a secretary. Came home, had a couple beers in the evening, complained about politics and work, that sort of thing. So, and I'm an only child. I don't know what gave me this spark other than like maybe too much love from both parents, I guess, to say you could do whatever you want. But I'm curious, like with siblings and what made you stand out or what made you follow this path?
Yeah, no. Well, first of all, I don't think you follow it. I think you kind of navigate it and create it yourself, because I really didn't have anybody to follow it with, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't have that. You know, I did have a couple uncles and even my dad, you know, kind of tried the entrepreneur thing, but always kind of failed. You know, as you know, as contractors, because that's what a lot of people in our family does, like building houses. That's kind of naturally, you know, I could build a house from ground up, even though I don't want to, I could anymore. But, you know, I saw that and I would just see them really good at getting the job and doing an amazing job, but then collecting the money was where they'd always fail, because they'd be on to the next thing. And I see a lot of entrepreneurs do that. It's easy to make it. It's hard to collect it. It's not even hard. It's just a process, right? You got to have a process and procedures. And, I don't know, man. I just always, like, you know, my pops is an amazing guy. I'd be in the van with him. I'd go to work. I always wanted to work. I always wanted to do something and be moving as young as I can remember. I mean, at 6, 7 years old, I was doing, like, selling my sister's toys at school, you know, for a quarter. I just was always deal making, honestly, like thinking, how can I, you know, back then, though, 90, this is way early. This is late 80s, early 80s, but I was always saying I was an entrepreneur, which back then was like you were lazy, just trying to figure out how to make money without working.
Right.
And people would say that, and I look at them like, okay, well, what's wrong with that? Like, mm-hmm. To me, that wasn't a dirty thing. And, you know, the more people told me I was crazy, I just had a feeling like, dude, I'm on to something, you know, because everyone telling me crazy doesn't have anything they want. Maybe I'm on to something big here.
Okay, so you're running your business and you're also promoting. Well, you kind of have a business, or you help people learn about real estate from your website, markevansdm.com. Is that right?
Yeah, that's just a free training. I don't do anything paid. I'm not a coach or anything like that. Gotcha. I used to be. Just I don't enjoy it anymore. But for me, I actually own multiple companies. But my real estate investment company is, you know, I have a thing called a deal-a-thon where, you know, 12 people come into a room, give or take 12, and we sit around and it's a mastermind. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, it's much more easy to talk to people actually doing it. My ultimate goal, Chris, is help people get it more. Like, I want those people. I don't want the guy saying, well, why would a seller sell you the house if it's worth so much more? It's like, because you sent a marketing piece to them and you picked up the phone and solved their problem. You know, so to me, it's like a lot of times people think everything's about money. Mm-hmm. And it's really not always that case. As you and I know, like sometimes it's just we just need a solution.
Right. Very true.
You know, what's my problem?
I've seen a lot of people take kind of, I guess you could call this a traditional route for an entrepreneur. They work really hard, build their business up, get a bunch of money, and then start to invest in real estate. And I was kind of on the real estate scene in 2008, 2009, back in the day in Phoenix, and okay. Saw a lot of crazy turmoil during that time. A lot of people make a lot of money and a lot of people lose everything. And it was a wild ride. And I'm curious, like if you would make some recommendations for entrepreneurs that are building up, you know, their business and growing their business, do you think it's a good idea to wait until you have a bunch of money and then get in real estate, or to slowly start invest into real estate as time goes on, as they're growing their net worth?
Yeah, I got a lot to say about that. Number one, the reason people got in trouble, Chris, as you know, they're speculators. They're not investors. Mm-hmm. Way different. Way, way, way different. Again, call me dumb. I did not get hurt in the market. We actually flourished because we had cash. We knew how to put deals together. And this is a big takeaway for anybody listening. I invest for cash flow, not speculation. So meaning if the house is worth 100 grand today and I make 10% of my money per year, you know, I don't care if the house goes to 5 million or goes to zero, I make 1,000 a month,
right.
You know, or whatever it is. So when people get in trouble is when they buy that $100,000 house, put 50 into it, try to sell it for 200, eventually that cycle slows down or stops or reverses. And that's what happened in those years. So very speculative. And, you know, someone ultimately is going to get caught on the wrong side. And a lot of people way smarter than me with way deeper pockets ended up going BK situation. But back to your question on should they wait. First of all, I don't know how much a lot of money is. I think it's very relative to depending how big or small you are, what that means to the average person. But I honestly, dude, I think a lot of people should not invest in real estate. I think if you're fidgety about money, if you don't understand how money is, I think you need to knowledge up about financial security and financial wealth before you just start throwing money in different locations. That means stock market, anything where your money's parked, including the bank. So for me, it's like, I love real estate. It's allowed me an amazing lifestyle, created financial freedom by 27. I mean, it's really done some cool stuff, but there's some headaches with it too, right? You have to ask yourself, do you want to be passive? Do you want to be active? Do you want to be a hybrid of middle, you know, in between that? And really, you got to come up with a solution for your situation and talk to someone that kind of knows both sides and can kind of help you navigate that journey, because it is a journey. But at the end of the day, the short answer is yes, invest. It's in real estate. I don't know if it's in big apartment complexes or single families, and I don't even know if it's at notes. I love the note business for entrepreneurs, though. When they act as the bank, because recovery of money is a little bit simpler. You don't have to deal with management companies. I mean, there's a lot of flexibility with the note side, and you can make, you know, 8 or 10% on your money fairly simple with very limited risk.
Do you do that yourself too?
Absolutely.
What sparked? So you said you were financially free at 27. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, just having enough money coming in passively that would allow me to live my life without working.
And roughly, what were the numbers for you?
Back then it was like probably $4,300, give or take.
A month.
Yeah. But dude, this is 2004 or five.
And that's your expenses, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That was my expenses. And then on the revenue, I mean, oh my gosh, I don't even remember. That was so long ago. Here's the thing is, honestly, Chris, I think people focus on the wrong numbers. I think everyone's trying to figure out how to make $1 million. You ask anybody, hey, how much you want to make $1 million? Like, right. Where's this magic number come from? What the hell does it even mean? It means nothing, first of all, because gross and net are way different worlds.
Right.
And secondly, focus on getting financially free. See, one thing I figured out early on in life, it's not about money. It's about time freedom. That's what I was always chasing. Like, I'm the guy, you can't tell me what to do because I have time and I can do whatever the heck I want. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's what I was always chasing. I always hated people said, you know, you can't do this, you can't. And it was never about more money. It was about more, how do I get money to get more time? So, I mean, dude, I know people make $100 million a year and they don't have time freedom.
Right.
You know? So, and then I know guys that make 50 grand a year that are the freest guys in the whole wide world.
Yeah.
Because they hang out with their kids. I think that's, we all got to figure out, I mean, do you want to be the Gary V or do you want to be this guy? I mean, there's no right or wrong. It's just, what does one want?
Right. Makes sense. So financially free is having your expenses or having your revenue higher than your monthly expenses, correct?
Yeah. And again, they're so correct.
Passively.
Passively, right? I still had active income. It's sometimes people are like, oh, you know, I'm financially free. I don't have to do anything. It's like, well, what do you do all day? For me, I get in trouble if I have too much time. Mm-hmm. So I actually love what we do. I mean, to me, it's a fun, it's exciting. It's, you know, changing people's lives, buying and selling and all that. So it was never like, oh, I'm just going to stop now. It was more like, now I don't have to do it. I want to do it.
What are some other, not assets, but other ways to create passive income that you've seen out there that look attractive, that may be a good idea for people to create passive income?
I mean, dude, there's millions of ways to create passive income. So I love investing in other companies. I do that as well. But again, I like to be involved. I'm not even 40 years old yet. So it's like, to me, I want to be sitting on a board with young guys hustling to live through them, investing my money and knowledge at 95 years old and just like making passive income from that. But there's so many, I mean, in real estate, there's many ways, but just business in general. You know, there's so many ways to make passive income. You could create a new product. You could create, you know, a book to get you on stage. That's a little, I guess that's not as passive, but there's a lot of things you could do to create passive income. I mean, it's literally limitless.
Have you found any specifically that you think are great opportunities that you may research yourself?
Yeah, again, investing in other businesses. I think the big question is, I would reverse engineer the question if I was a listener and say, what is my unique ability? And then build passive income streams inside of your unique ability, right? Because to me, my unique ability is deal making. You don't have to explain a deal to me. I've already programmed myself for 22 years to know the risk and reward in real estate or any kind of investment, right? Buying a business. I know the upside, downside fairly quickly. I know the Rembrandt and the attic. I see it like a bigger value of evaluation on the deal. Mm-hmm. So I'm more looking for that. I actually invested in, I have another company, a media company I have. And, you know, it's 2.5 years old. I've taken $1 a year out of that passively. But on the next side, 3 years from now, that's a 9-figure business mm-hmm. to me. So it depends on where, if you need the money, if you don't need the money, are you trying to push it? Are you trying to 1031 it? I mean, this conversation is limitless too.
Right.
You know, but again, I think start with your unique ability and build one stream of passive income. And how big are you trying to build it? How much time do you have to spend to build it up front, as well as kind of a, you know, take and give situation?
So when it comes to making deals, like, let's talk about somebody, say they're an entrepreneur and they're going to sell their first business, or an entrepreneur that wants to do their first real estate deal. Let's get in their heads and maybe give some suggestions about the mentality that you should have before going into making a deal.
No worst case scenario, best case scenario. And if you're good with worst case scenario, move forward. If you're not, move on or dig deeper.
Could you give an example of worst case scenario?
Are we talking about real estate?
Yeah. Let's say real estate deal.
Yeah. So let's use a simple single family, Columbus, Ohio, $80,000 rental. At $80,000, it rents out for $1,000 a month. You get $12,000 a year in gross revenue, gross income, minus expenses, management, you know, blah, 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 blah. You net 10% a year on the deal. It's at 80 grand. You could say, well, the market's hot. Is the house going to be worth more in 5 years from now? No one knows. No one, if anybody tells you, they're lying to you, period. You can speculate again. And or are you okay if it goes down 20%? Now you have a house that you bought for 80 worth 64 or 62 or whatever. Are you okay with that? You're still making 10% on your original money that you put in. And what are you buying for? Are you buying long-term or short-term? And then all of a sudden, if you're okay with worst case, you do it. If you're not, you don't do it. Or you dig deeper and start asking different questions. Like, you know, typically, guys, when the market goes down too, right, Chris, rents usually go up when the retail market shoots down. Mm-hmm. And then not only that, if you're investing in the Midwest and Ohio, very hard to have a 20% swing down. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Right.
Usually where that happens is on East Coast, West Coast. So understanding your data points and knowing what the data is really telling you is kind of the secret sauce of the whole business. And that comes with experience. Like anybody listening, their business, if I went into it, I have a general knowledge of business, but there's always those Rembrandt opportunities that allow you to kind of see and forecast way different than I would. It's just, you know, it's how we programmed ourselves to be successful.
So you mentioned you've been location independent location independent since 2005,
December 31st.
Yep. Very cool. It's like a second birthday, right?
Yeah. Well, sort of. Yeah, absolutely.
For me, my day is April 27th, 2011. So every April 27th, I do something a little special. Anyway, what happened? So what changed for you in that moment? What changed with the thinking? What changed with the lifestyle? What changed with the income and the business and all of it?
Yeah, so that's kind of what I talk about in my new book. But October 8th was a big day for me. That's when my grandmother passed away unexpectedly. We knew 2 weeks prior, she actually went to the basic doctor checkup, boom, you have stage 4 cancer, you have 2 weeks, prepare. Hmm. And then she passes. To me at that moment, I was young, 27, working literally 4 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day, 7 days a week, because I loved it, whatever. And probably like most entrepreneurs, it's kind of not work. But it's easier to forget that there's a life beyond this. And that moment just kind of rattled me. And I was like, dude, there's so much more to life. I want to do stuff. And I had a girlfriend then, Dina, now my wife. She's like, let's travel. Let's leave, kind of get away for a month. A month turned into 2.5 years straight. Literally, like, nice. Did not stop. Started off in Florida to kind of, you know, pop my cherry, if you will, and just kind of like, you know, dry heave, you know, like, oh, if I only go 2.5 hours away, worst case, I can get on a plane and be home and fix the problem. Mm-hmm. it forced me to let go and stop micromanaging small time stuff and start focusing on big stuff that actually mattered. And not to say, Chris, I didn't have many, 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 many days of dry heaving, anxiety attacks, because it's real. And if anybody tells you differently, they're full, 100% full of it. So because it's a transition, I mean, we're deprogramming our brain of what got us to our point, right? What's that saying? What got us to where we're at is not going to get us to where we want to go. So it was kind of just like a perfect storm for me that just forced me to, like, you know, do I want this to be my life? If I only had 1 year left, is this where I want to be? The answer was no, so I made a decision to do something about it.
And what'd that look like after you made that decision?
Well, I mean, October 8th to December 31st, I had to get my things in order. I had to sell my, you know, I had a condo there. I had to move my stuff and rent it out. had to find a place to go stay. This is before Airbnb. This is back in old school days when you jump on Craigslist and try to get scammed 30 times. But, you know, I just started putting pieces in places. And I had a team then, right? I had an office, I had a team. I had to sit down with them and say, hey, guys, I'm leaving. You know, keep in mind, like, as an entrepreneur, we're the guys and gals that always says, we can do it better, we can do it quicker, we can make more money, blah, blah. And all those answers are 100% probably true. The question is you have to, the only issue with all that is you have to be involved in all those pieces. And it forced me to kind of stop, like I said, overhearing silly sales calls I should have never heard, overhearing, you know, internal politics stuff I should have never heard, and jumping into it, more importantly, is probably my problem. But from my experience, a lot of owners, business owners, are very micromanaging people. That's, again, because that's what we do. And just got me out of my own way. Honestly, it was scary.
How did your team handle it?
Well, we lost half the team within 3 months.
Really?
Because weak people show up quickly, you know, when I'm not there covering up their weaknesses, you know? So to me, it was like, but keep in mind, my mindset back then was, let's have the biggest building, the biggest office, the coolest people with the nicest cars in the parking lot. And then I realized again, back in October when that happened, like, that's not what it's about to me anymore. I just want to have a cool life, buy a lot of time, and just live life to the fullest. And I don't care if anybody knows I have money or not. Back then I did. I wanted to go to the bank and hand them the $2 million check that I just closed on and just have the lady look at me and say, what do you do? So it was more of an ego thing, honestly.
And then, so once you were remote, once you were abroad, how did you, what was your day-to-day life like as for running the business? Or did you have any input at all? Or did the team just manage everything?
Well, no, listen, again, when you're starting to depart like that, unless you're really dialed in with a mass, like COOs and everything else high level, you're definitely involved. So, but these are flip phone days. These are, again, internet's different days. This is 2000, you know, beginning 2006. So to me, I was on the call. I was on call, a lot of group calls with the team, probably 2-3 hours a day. But I'm always an early riser. I get up 4 or 5, whatever. Go down to the beach when I was in Florida. My days are fairly similar to what they were back then. I like to get up early. I like to do my big work, my heavy work in the morning before anybody gets up. And then now I run, you know, I used to spend, what, probably 3 to 4 hours a day on the calls with the team, kind of organizing, collaborating, talking, deal making, still telling them what to do, what not to do, fire this person, hire that person, et cetera. And then now today, you know, I spend probably about 10 minutes or less a day inside of those companies on the, it's called a daily huddle. We get on the calls and people are sharing their KPIs, key performance indicators, to give me some insight and clarity of what's actually happening on a day-to-day basis.
So how was your quality of life once you did become remote and you were living abroad?
Yeah, well, dude, I mean, listen, it's, I don't even, I feel, it doesn't even seem real. You know what I mean? Like, once you get out of the anxiety attack syndrome, not to say you won't have them occasionally, because that's called growth, but to me it was more of like, I mean, where else can you, I don't know how to explain it, honestly. It's surreal, right? Me, my wife, now my son, like, we could be anywhere in the world. First of all, no one even knows where you're at today at all. Zilch. I do have a pretty cool office in Palm Beach I never go to. But my COO has it, you know, the salespeople and all that. They love it because, you know, it's all about them. It's not about me. And, but as you know, man, it's a pretty amazing, you could be in Ubud and, you know, or anywhere in the world and just like on the beach, in your car at the pool, smoking a cigar, doing whatever kind of shenanigans, laying in bed, mm-hmm. closing a deal. I mean, it just doesn't matter anymore if you've set it up properly.
Have you met, I'm sure you have, but like from your travels, have you met or made any business from being location independent specifically?
Oh, I mean, dude, for sure. As you know, like when you're, because typically I'd be at the bar, restaurant or whatever at 11 or 12 o'clock. My day's already done depending what part of the world I'm in. And, you know, you're talking to some American, for instance, if I am, or talking out loud and someone overhears your conversation, they're mesmerized that this world even exists. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of starting the journey or path, or they've been involved in it, which means they're entrepreneurial probably. And you just start talking to them, and then all of a sudden they're like, hey, you know, I have 350 grand. I want to do a real estate deal, and I don't want to do all the headaches. So, I mean, we've done deals up to millions of dollars from people I've met that way.
So when you went 2.5 years on traveling, where all did you go?
Oh, gosh. All over Italy, Barcelona, Santorini, which is one of my favorite, Paris, London, Phuket, Bangkok, PP Island, pretty much all of Thailand, Southeast Asia, Singapore, Malaysia. I mean, Hawaii for a couple months. A lot of U.S., right? To me, that was kind of like my stepping stones. Let's go to U.S. for a while.
Yeah.
So like if all heck breaks loose, I can actually get back on a plane and be quick home within 6 hours maximum, depending where I'm at. That's kind of what was my fail safe. But I mean, first of all, there's a lot of places to see in America.
That's true.
So, you know, there's a ton of places. Yeah, man, Athens, there's so many places to see. Actually, my wife's really good. I'm so bad with names and all that good stuff. I kind of have I always forget dates and timelines. I don't know if you ever do that, but I'm like, my days run together and my years run together. So it's kind of wild anymore.
Yeah. Where, how much time did you spend in Italy?
Oh, months. We've spent months there. Yeah. My wife's Italian actually. So we were just there last year for 6 weeks. The year before, I think we were there 3 months. All over, starting from north to south. We like, you know, Positano, you know, down in there. We love, you know, Florence, pretty much the big, but we try to go in the outskirts. We don't try to go in like the big, you know, populated tourist trap areas.
Yeah.
Really just hang out and get a place for 1 to 3 months and just hang out and chill and kind of use it as a hub while you're in that country.
Where I'm in Tuscany right now.
Oh, are you? Beautiful. Cool. Oh, man, what is that place we went to in Tuscany? I was just there last year. We went and we had this awesome private dinner and wine thing. It was amazing. I'll have to send you an email. I don't remember the name of it, but it's definitely worth going to.
Cool. Yeah, I think we're going to spend the summer here, and then we usually go down to Thailand for like October, November. So
oh, nice.
This is my girlfriend's part Italian too, and so she wanted to come here and spend some time. So yeah, it's amazing here. It's just, it feels cool being in Italy, you know? It's just like there's something special about it.
Yeah, no, it definitely. I mean, you know, it's a really cool place. I love what are the trees pointing up to the gods? I forget what they're called. I actually never knew that story for a couple of years, but we actually have tons of those trees in my house in Ohio. I've always liked the look of them and, you know, kind of use them as a fence line, if you will.
Uh-huh.
But it's kind of a cool story. Not only that, too, you know, one thing, too, Chris, I don't know if you do this, but I haven't watched the news in many, many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife and I, like, swear to you, our travel schedule never had a plan. Like, we would wake up and said, where do you want to be today or tomorrow? And we would just schedule. We didn't know if there was, you know, no travel agreements or whatever going on. We just went. And, like, literally, it was probably more stressful on my parents and family than anything, because my mom's calling, oh, my God, you're going to get killed over there. Be careful. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm looking at it's beautiful. What are you, like, so it's funny how the media does that to you.
That's very true. And actually, I could do more of that. I'm a planner, so I'm always about 12 months out, I usually know where I'm going to go. So, but I could do more like you, you know, I need some of that in my life. What would you say to the entrepreneurs that are out there in the hustle? Like they're at the 5-figure level, trying to hit the 6-figure, 6-figure level, trying to hit the 7-figure, the location independent entrepreneurs, any tips that you would give to them?
Is this monthly or yearly or both or whatever? Kind of.
Yeah. Just really anybody that's in the hustle, just trying to get to the next level.
Dude, the tips is just buy your way to the top. Invest in mentors. I'm telling you, like I've been investing in mentors. I'm in two masterminds. You know, one of them's 100K a year, the other one's 50K a year. And, you know, I'm at a semi-decent level, but I feel like I'm just starting, honestly, Chris. So I always feel like I'm behind the eight ball. I think if you're, you know, it's kind of a great book Tim Grover talks about in Relentless is like, you don't know you're in the top when you're at the top. You know, you just, you want more. You want to get better, stronger, tighter, faster, smoother. Honestly, people are just playing too small. And that's a very broad stroke. But, you know, if you're not email marketing, you're missing the boat. Like email market, I send 150 million emails a month out. Wow. And we're trying to figure out how to send 500 million.
Wow.
Because it works. And everyone's like, well, it's different now. Yes, it is, but it still works.
Yeah.
So that, and then, you know, probably a really, really big thing, and this is a write me down one, is focus on data, not drama. No one cares about your situation except you and your mom or your wife or spouse. So stop complaining about the problems you can't control, i.e. government, i.e. you know, whatever's going on in your industry. And start focusing on what you can control. Everyone's always asking me, like, Mark, you know, what do you think about this and that? Did this tax break help? You know, I'm like, dude, the only thing I focus on is on me, economy, because it's the only thing I can remotely control. And it's hard enough for myself. So, you know, for example, like, you know, the tax bill or whatever for entrepreneurs got better for the employees and this and that. And my driver was talking to me about it coming from the airport recently. He's like, are you so happy? I'm like, dude, where would I be if you raised it or didn't raise it? I'm still in this. I still got to make more money.
Yeah.
So why even put any thought? Why even put a nanosecond of thought into it? Right. At all.
Yeah.
So one of my mentors always says, Mark, things always get done when you're worried or not worried. So why worry? And, you know, to me, I was like, okay, that makes sense. And again, that's the data, not drama technique. So your KPIs are key performance indicators in your company. Will give you confidence, will give you direction, will give you courage when you don't want to. When you're dry heaving, you know, three times a week, it would reduce it to one time a week. You know, what drives me nuts, Chris, is people know stats about, you know, sports athletes and all this stuff, which yeah. A stat is a KPI, by the way.
Yeah.
About all these athletes that will never make them a penny, and yet their own company that could make them millions, if not billions, and change their life and their future and their legacy and their family's life, they're clowning around and playing small and really, really missing the boat. And 99% of the people I talk to in business have no clue about stats in their company, unfortunately.
What have you seen working on email marketing these days?
Emailing. That's it. Emailing offers. So where I see a lot of people miss the boat, and this is another like think about it and do it and watch the results, stop emailing your list just about offers. Start providing value. Start edutaining them. Educate and entertain your marketplace. And it's really the one-night stand effect, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are just emailing their list when they want something from their list. I'm actually, you know, you can – the good news is you can actually do both. You know, you could be the cool person in your industry by sharing information – about X, Y, and Z, casting some stones at the environment and then extracting a buyer. I'm not a hardcore sales guy at all, Chris. So I built our company around consultative selling. So I actually genuinely, you know, I like people.
Mm-hmm.
And I genuinely want to hear what their problems are because I realize my problems and their problems could be two totally different worlds, but how do we help each other grow? So really understanding who your people are, how, ask them. Simple. Send out an email and say, hey, you know, I was sitting here thinking, what are your top three things that are holding you back from doing X, Y, and Z? Or what would stop you from buying a product from me or a project? You know, whatever that is, we got to remember there's a lot of people on emails, Chris, and everyone's in different stages of different life at all different times.
Right.
So you can't be just talking to them, bye, bye, bye. Like, actually get a little bit compassionate with them and have a conversation with them through email, which is awesome. And then start, you know, creating videos. It doesn't have to just be text. It could be a video. It could be audio. It could be a webinar. It could be a podcast show, what you're doing. I mean, there's so many ways to connect with people.
How often are you emailing to your email list per week?
Well, I have different types. So my real estate list, we email once a week. One day a week. My media company, we email the list three times a day. Because that's more of an aggregate of data. Kind of think of the Drudge Report, if you will, where we're aggregating data in an environment. And sending out alerts is really what that system does. So that's three times a day, which is pretty cool. And the magic of all that, the more we email, guess what happens? the more revenue we generate.
Yeah.
People are always focusing on the wrong things. Well, I get a lot of opt-outs, so go get a lot more opt-ins. You're always going to get opt-outs. Like, if you're focusing on that, again, it's an uncontrollable action, then you're losing the game, right? You're focusing on the wrong number.
Yeah.
If you get 100 opt-outs a day, how do we get 100-plus opt-ins a day?
Yeah.
There's always a trick to everything.
What's your favorite accomplishment since you've been location independent?
Oh, my son.
That's a good one.
Yeah. August 19, 2015. That was amazing. But awesome, you know, just knowing that it's available. You know, I try to tell everyone about this life. If I talk to 100 people, maybe one actually listens.
Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting. There is another world that exists when you get in this, as you know, Chris, is like there's other people doing it. And the conversations are pretty cool when you're hanging out with them.
It really is. Very powerful.
Yeah, because everyone's coming from different backgrounds. You know, another cool accomplishment, I don't know if you've done this yet, but we actually, my wife and I walked the Camino de Santiago, the 42-day walk.
Yeah, I've done it twice. Spain.
Oh, have you?
Yeah. So what year did you do it?
2000, I don't remember, but I think 14-ish.
That's when March I did of 14. It.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you start? How funny would it be if we met? I started in France. We started
where you're supposed to. Started in France too, yeah. But I think I started in, you went in March, you said?
Honestly, I have no clue. April or March. I remember that.
I was April, beginning of May. No. I was May, June. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's on my website. I talk about it. I kind of laid out my whole plan and everything.
What was your biggest takeaway from the Camino?
Everyone says they go there for spiritual reasons, mm-hmm. which is awesome. I think the reason they do that because it's like, Jesus, get me to the end. I'm done. I'm not doing this again. Spiritual realization.
Yeah.
For me, it was really just, you know, how productive we can be in a constrained environment, right? And that's what happens when we travel is like we get so much done in like an hour that back in the day at home, you're just hanging out, you're doing 40 hours and you're overwhelmed and anxious to do it.
Mm-hmm. So you were working during the hike?
No, I don't know what working means, genuinely. I'm not saying that to be silly. I don't know what that means. Every day I do what I want. So I want to know what my team's up to. I care about them. I want to know what the business is doing. I'm paying attention. Like, you know, I'm thinking about how, you know, streamlining stuff and, you know, I'm writing notes down. I'm kind of that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But working to me is just, you know, Bora Bora. I could be in Bora Bora hanging out at the Four Seasons and I'm thinking about like how to make everyone's life and our team better.
Yeah.
Supply chain. How do we add more money? Take this away. But I wasn't doing anything like heavy, if that makes sense.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing, man. Small world, huh?
So I guess we did it in May 5th, 2013.
Dude, I was like 10 days behind you.
That's crazy.
I followed your footsteps.
Yeah. You got to check out my thing, dude. I literally, like, my wife and I, how we came about it is we were watching the movie The Way.
Yeah.
If you ever seen that. Me too. We were sitting there watching the movie. I was like, we should do that. I forgot it wasn't 2 hours long like the movie. It was 42 days long.
Yeah,
but right. It was pretty cool. Yeah, May 9th, 2013 is when we left, and that's when we started in
Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. You have it on your website, your
details? Just go to search and type in Camino.
Okay.
And we ended June 20th, which is cool. I actually ended up we were in Santiago on my birthday, the 19th and 20th, which is pretty cool.
Dude, my birthday is the 18th of June.
Oh, really? I'm the 19th.
Yeah, right on, man. Okay, I'm going to check this out. Camino de Santiago. And were you there? No, that was it. Where was I? Okay, we were probably a week behind you. If you were on the 18th, 19th, and 20th, if you were like right into Santiago, I was about a week behind you.
Yep.
It's wild.
It is wild. Met a lot of amazing people, though, man. Still talk to people from that experience.
Yeah. Listeners, like, if you don't know what the Camino de Santiago is, it's a 500-mile pilgrimage across the south of France and north of Spain. It's over 1,000 years old, and people just do it. You know, it takes about 5 weeks, more or less, and you get a backpack and you hike the whole trail. And people just do it for spiritual reasons, but also I did it for the adventure. You know, and it's a mind-blowing experience because you can really, within a couple of days, you connect and you bond with people on a level that you don't necessarily do with people you know your entire life. And I'm sure you've had a similar experience, Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I did it too. I did it for the journey, not the spiritual journey. I did it just to kind of go, and my wife is Catholic, but, you know, we went there. I just wanted to go and experience. Like, guys, you got 500 miles, you disconnect, and you're walking through, what is that flat area? I forget where all the weed is or whatever. Meseta. You're like just walking and walking. You're like, does this ever end? And then you get a calmness over you where it's like, dude, you're not really in full control of your, you know, like you're here at the moment, but like, what happens if I'm dead now? What actually happens in the world? Am I even missed? Am I even missed?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, so some of the legacy pieces I really made me dive deeper about legacy building, live the legacy while I'm alive, and also build the legacy when I'm gone.
Nice. It's such a great time to disconnect and just think about the bigger things in life for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mark, I think we're going to wrap up, buddy. If the listeners want to reach out and learn more about you, or I know you have a book coming out soon too, right?
I do. My 9th book comes out June 19th.
Sure. But, so your listeners, good date.
Yeah, no, it's a great month and a great date. So I'll be the big 40, which is insane. But yeah, man, I wanted to do something special and give you guys a free chapter of the book. It's one of our most impactful chapters, actually, the Data Not Drama, where we really dive deep into that conversation and what that means to you to help you grow. You mind if I give the website for that?
Please, Chris? please.
Yeah. So it's 10minutebusinessowner.com/Chris.
Cool.
Yeah. So get over there and download it and, you know, read it. And what's cool about that book too, Chris, is 100% of the net profits go to charity. Nice. All my books go to charity, actually. So it's a good way to give back at a high level.
What charities do you donate to?
Yeah, so the Caring House Project Foundation, which is a charity out in Haiti where we build self-sustained communities. The Addison Quinn Foundation, which is out in New Jersey for the veterans. And then the Boys and Girls Club of Lorain, Ohio to impact. So I want to impact veterans, children, and the less fortunate.
Right on. Beautiful, man. Yeah. Mark, thanks so much for coming on the show. Thanks for sharing your tips and your tricks and all your wisdom with us. We really appreciate it, my friend.
Definitely, man. Thank you, Chris, for having me, buddy. Anything I can do to help, let me know, guys. Thank you.
And we'll put all of your links in the show notes. Listeners, thank you guys for joining us once again. We're going to wrap up there, and we'll see you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everybody. Hey, listeners. Thanks again for joining the show. We wanted to remind you about our Get Shit Done one-on-one productivity coaching that we recently just launched. What we do is work with you to create big business goals that are absolutely game changers. We make a plan together and put you in our productivity hacking system that helps you stay on target. Each week, you get a call with yours truly about what steps to take for the following week. Some say it's like a year of productivity in just 3 months. Check out all the details at thebusinessmethod.com/coaching. thebusinessmethod.com/coaching.